Nashville 103.7. Streaming online, WPVMFM.org.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on the new WPVM FM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. We come to you every Thursday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. at 103.7, and you can hear us at WPVMFM.org as well. Each week, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone, whether it be those who are working in the areas of hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, healthcare, education, housing, restoration of the environment, or those people and organizations who bring a fresh perspective to spirituality. A Better World features positive interviews with people who are making a difference. And our guest today is Dana Smith. She's the executive director with the Dogwood Alliance. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Hi, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So tell us, what is the Dogwood Alliance?
Dogwood Alliance is a nonprofit organization that's based in Asheville, North Carolina. And our focus is protecting the forests and communities across the southeastern U.S. from the impacts of destructive industrial logging.
What exactly do you mean by industrial destructive logging?
Large-scale clear-cutting and the conversion of natural forests to intensively managed plantations.
Is this a relatively new event, or has this been going on for decades?
It's been going on for decades. Dogwood Alliance was formed in 1996 at sort of the height of expansion of the paper industry in the U.S. Because people all across the region started to notice a lot more logging trucks on the road, a lot more forests that were being clear-cut, and then in their place a lot more single-species plantations that were being planted. And there was growing concern all across the region. People were seeing this trend happening. And Dogwood Alliance came into being to bring the voices of the people of the South into the forefront of a conversation about what was happening to our forests.
Mm-hmm. And your role, tell me about what you do.
I'm the executive director here, and I'm also one of the founders. I've been around the organization since the very beginning.
And you have how many staff on Dogwood Alliance?
We have 17 on staff right now.
And do people volunteer for you as well?
Absolutely. We have volunteers here in Asheville locally, and we have volunteers all across the region and even across the country.
Okay. And how many states are we talking about when you say the South?
About 14 states, going from South Missouri and East Texas all the way to Florida, Virginia, and everything in between.
Okay. I wanted to ask you now about the different types of forests that we have here in the South. There's not one particular kind, is there?
We have some of the most diverse forests in all of North America. We have so many different forest types and different tree species. Up here in the Appalachians, we have hardwood forests. Down in the lowlands of the South, you've got bottomland hardwood wetland forests and longleaf pine savannas. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of different types of forests across the southeastern region. Mm-hmm.
And what about in North Carolina, like in Western North Carolina here?
In Western North Carolina here, we're blessed with what they call mixed mesophytic forests, which are some of the most biologically diverse forests in the world. They house the most species of salamanders of anywhere on the planet, for example.
Mm-hmm. And why is it good to have these diverse species?
Well, when a forest is diverse, it's healthy and resilient. And forests, a lot of people forget that we as humans actually depend on forests for life-supporting services. Forests stabilize, at a global scale, the climate. At a local scale, they purify water. They ensure that we have abundant supplies of clean water. They protect us from the worst effects of extreme weather events like flooding. And we as humans depend on all of these services for our own survival. But biodiversity also is just makes our life so much more interesting. It underpins our existence as humans and our interrelationship with everything else that's alive on this planet. Forests are just such a critical part of our ability to survive now and into the future. Mm-hmm. And the more diverse a forest is, the healthier it is, and the more it's able to withstand the impacts of a changing climate, for example.
Mm-hmm. So I read recently that what used to be a problem in western North Carolina was the damage to the forest in the upper elevations from acid rain. And this article was saying that that's improved somewhat. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it absolutely has improved.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
I've noticed that even in my lifetime.
Have you?
Because of the cleanup of the pollution that was causing that acid rain from the plants, the pollution that was occurring.
Coal plants,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. So tell me about yourself. What's your background? How did you come to start Dogwood Alliance?
Well, I grew up in the southeastern U.S. in a little town called Bluffton, which is in the rural coastal plain of the South, just across the river from Hilton Head Island. I grew up as a wild child, roaming free-ranging. I grew up thinking everybody had dolphins in their backyard. I was always in the woods, in the marsh, in the river, and grew up really with a deep connection to nature. I went on to go to law school and got out of law school and practiced law for a couple of years before realizing this really wasn't for me. I really wanted to do something with my life that made a difference in the world. So I quit my legal job and I went to work for Greenpeace for 3 years. And at the end of that three-year period of Greenpeace went through some financial struggles and cut the Atlanta office, which is where I was working at the time. And I had a little bit of time on my hands to figure out my next move. And that's when I started to hear more and more about the concerns that communities and groups across the region were having about all the logging that was taking place in the southeastern U.S. Mm-hmm. And so I, along with a couple of other key folks, came together and pulled a coalition of organizations and people together to create the Dogwood Alliance so that we could elevate the voice, we could coordinate our efforts, and have a bigger impact.
Mm-hmm. And you've been there the whole time now, huh?
I have been there the whole time.
Okay. Are there any states, or particular states, I should say, where most of your efforts are focused at the present time?
At the present time, we're focused in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and a little bit in Virginia. We also have campaigns that impact the entire region. So even though we have geographically some areas that we're really focused on, the work that we do and the campaigns that we run are impacting all of the southeastern U.S. states.
Okay. I just want to throw a statistic at you. When I was doing some research for the show, I found that the landmass of North Carolina is about 32 million acres, and the World Wildlife Fund says that the world is losing approximately 18 million acres of primary forest each year. That's equivalent to something like 27 soccer fields every minute. So that's over half of the landmass of North Carolina if it was all covered in trees being lost every year around the world. I mean, that to me is an alarming figure.
It absolutely is. And a lot of people don't realize in the southeastern U.S. that we are the world's largest wood-producing region. And we have a forest destruction rate from logging that is unmatched anywhere on the planet. The rate and scale of logging, according to recent satellite imagery analysis that was done at the University of Maryland, has documented that the rate and scale of logging in the southeastern U.S. is four times that of South American rainforest.
So the rainforest, I mean, they get harvested, the timber gets harvested, there's agricultural expansion, wildfires, construction of roads for resource mining and extraction, those sorts of things. What kind of threats are happening to the southern forests? Is it the same thing or just one particular thing?
What we're seeing in the southeastern U.S. is slightly different. We definitely, our forests have some pressure from development, from urban areas, also certainly pressure from agriculture. But the main driver of what we're seeing across the southeastern U.S. from forest loss and forest cover loss is industrial logging for wood products. So the forests are allowed to grow back, right? They're logged, and then they're either replanted in fast-growing plantations, or they're allowed to naturally regenerate. But the challenge that we're facing in the southeastern region is that the rate and scale of logging is such that our forests are extremely young. Less than 15% of our forests are over 100 years old, though forests can live to be, you know, trees can live to be hundreds, if not over a thousand of years old. Mm-hmm. So what's happening in the southeast is large-scale degradation of ecosystems, the fragmentation from road building, logging road building and construction, but also fragmentation that happens when a forest is cleared, and fragmentation of natural forests that are being replaced with plantations. Mm-hmm.
Are all plantations pine forests?
In the southeastern U.S., yes. Though there is research and development happening right now that's underway. The southeastern region is leading in the research and development of genetically engineered eucalyptus trees, which are non-native to the southeastern U.S. They're being genetically modified so that they can tolerate frost, because they normally don't grow in places where it gets as cold as it gets here in the wintertime. And we've become, you know, the world's incubator of genetically engineered tree species. Those tree species are not yet being grown on an industrial scale, and but that tends to be where the industry seems to be headed.
So why eucalyptus trees?
Because they grow incredibly fast.
And the pine trees, they grow fast as well. Is their growth supplemented with growth hormones or anything like that? I mean, can they do that with trees?
Yeah, these pine trees that they're growing in plantations today have been hybridized to grow very quickly. They're mostly planting loblolly pines and slash. And loblolly used to make up a very small portion of the pine component of the pine forest in the South historically. Today, it is the number one species of pine growing in the southeastern forest. That has largely replaced the longleaf pine savanna, which is one of the most endangered ecosystems in the world. It used to dominate the natural pine forest across the southeastern plain, and today it's been reduced to less than 2% of its original range.
Mm-hmm. Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about...
You're listening to a conversation with Dana Smith. She's executive director of the Dogwood Alliance, and you're listening to us on 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org.
There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the night. was hoping for replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high.
What are the different impacts that a community can experience as a result of logging that takes place in their community?
So there are many. We hear from local communities concerns about the logging truck traffic, the dangerous logging trucks on the roads, the tearing up of the roads from the logging trucks at the community level is also a concern that we hear from the rural communities. We're hearing increased concern from communities about flooding along in the coastal plain and concern about the loss of wetland forests along the rivers at a time when we're experiencing, you know, pretty intense flooding going on in the coastal plain of the southeastern U.S. right now. Communities have complained about the chemical spraying that goes on in these plantations, the herbicides and fertilizers, and the chemicals they're concerned about that are going into the groundwater potentially. And people are concerned about just the loss of the beauty of their forests and the wildlife that depend on the forests in their communities.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard also I think I was talking to someone at the local hardware store, and he was saying that the pine that most of the big box stores carry in terms of lumber that comes from these forests is not very good wood, because it is given this growth product, you know, to make it grow. It's soft. It doesn't tend to be as hard as something that's grown naturally. And he was saying if you want good wood, you need to go to a private logging or sawmill or something like that to get, you know, like if you're doing construction or something.
Absolutely. When you're growing trees that fast, they're not as strong.
Mm-hmm. So is Dogwood Alliance doing anything here in Western North Carolina?
Several years ago, were leading a project called the Carbon Canopy Project. And we worked with private landowners in the Southern Appalachian region to figure out how to do carbon projects on their land, how to actually generate revenue from leaving trees standing and capturing the value, the climate benefits of the value of carbon storage in forests. And through that project, we were one of the first projects to complete a forest carbon project with landowners in the U.S. to meet the rigorous standards of the California protocols. So we have done work in the Southern Appalachian kind of area here in and around Asheville. Where the logging is really the most pronounced is in the coastal plain of the U.S. South, all along the coast, running from the coast of Virginia all the way down through northern Florida and across to the Mississippi Delta. And so in recent years, that's really been where most of our work has been focused.
So are the big corporations like, is it Weyerhaeuser and these other companies just going in and, or do they already own all the land and they're just reaping the benefits of it? Or are they going in and buying it from rural communities? What's happening that they have control over all this land?
Yeah, this is a really fascinating question. Though we're the world's largest wood and paper producing region, these big, huge companies don't need to own land in order to supply their mills, because we have created the right policies and tax incentives such that private landowners who own most of this land in the coastal plain of the U.S. South, overwhelming majority of it is not publicly owned, it's owned by private landowners, are incentivized to engage in commercial logging. We've got subsidies that go right now to pay cost-share landowners to replant their forests in pine trees. So there's a whole system of policies set up and designed specifically to make sure that these large corporations have an adequate and abundant supply of low-cost raw material for their manufacturing facilities. It's a culture of industrial logging that is pervasive across the southeastern U.S.
What about in the coastal plain where there's public lands? Are they experiencing any similar pressure?
In the public lands in the coastal plain, because there is opportunity for public comment and because the law requires, at least with the national forest, that those areas be managed for multiple purposes, which include recreation, watershed protection, wildlife, and biodiversity, they tend to be better managed. The public lands tend to be better managed. Now, that's not to say that they're being managed perfectly, but they do tend to be better managed than lands that are in private ownership, primarily because on private lands, there are no rules and regulations, and the forests are not being managed necessarily for multiple use.
And there's no requirement that, like on private land, that they be replanted with anything?
There's absolutely no requirement.
Okay. So unless a person wants to engage in the industrial pine forest, they can leave it to come back up by itself. How long does it take a forest to grow it by itself naturally to grow back?
Over a century, really, to get the full complement of species that are reflective of a natural and healthy forest. Mm-hmm. And the challenge that we're having right now in the southeastern U.S. is that the demand and the rate and scale of logging is such that forests are not being allowed to grow to maturity.
Mm-hmm. So where is the demand coming from?
Right now, it's mostly paper and what you described as 2x4 lumber, fast-growing, you know, lumber products, as well as some plywood and oriented strand board. Mm-hmm. The real driver of the worst kind of forestry practices are companies that use what they call pulpwood, which is small diameter twisted wood that otherwise would not be used for quality saw timber. And those industries are really driving the clear cutting and the short rotation forestry practices that we're seeing across the region. You've got a very high concentration of paper mills in the coastal plain of the U.S. South. Mm-hmm. Up here in the Appalachian region, you have more solid wood producers. So you don't see as much of the short rotation plantation management. You see forests being managed more for saw timber and less for paper. But a new threat has emerged recently in the southeastern region that poses a new significant threat, and that's another market for what they call low-grade and small-diameter wood, and that's the wood pellet market.
Explain about that, what the wood pellets are.
Yeah, so we are now turning forests into wood pellets, shipping them across the Atlantic and burning them in power stations in Europe as renewable energy. This new market has just emerged in the last several years, and the southeastern U.S. has very rapidly become the world's largest exporter of wood pellets.
So how did that get started in Europe? I mean, was there no connection between, people didn't see the connection between their heat and what it would do to the forest here?
Well, and it's not just heat. That's the thing. They're actually converting coal-burning power plants to burn wood to generate electricity. It takes a tremendous amount of wood to generate even a small amount of electricity, and the amount of carbon that's released is greater than what would have been released if they had stuck with coal.
Everybody's touting the benefits of natural gas. So where does that fall into the spectrum? Why not convert from coal to natural gas instead of wood?
Well, in Europe, they erroneously are counting the burning of trees as to generate electricity as having zero carbon impact because trees grow back. And in Europe, they do believe in climate change. They are taking steps to address climate change. They have regulation that requires utility companies to reduce their carbon emissions by 20% by 2020 and to move to renewable energy during that same 20% of their energy coming from renewable energy during that same period. And they are massively subsidizing the transition off of fossil fuels in the utility sector. The challenge has been that because they treat burning wood as zero carbon, they're now converting big coal plants to burning wood because they don't have to, you know, as opposed to solar and wind, where you have to build all new infrastructure. If you're a utility company and you have these coal-burning power plants and you've already invested all this money in these coal-burning power plants and you can get subsidies to simply switch your fuel from burning coal to burning wood and get paid to do it, you're going to do that. And that's what we've seen happen in Europe, especially in the UK. A company called Drax, which has the world's Europe's largest coal-burning power plant, is now converting over to wood. And because of that, we've seen this rapid build out of wood pellet facilities across the South.
I mean, I've been totally ignorant about this. I'd never considered wood being a renewable energy. To me, it was solar and wind. And
well, it's true. That's what most people think about when they think about renewable energy. Most people don't think about wood, but it's actually lumped in not just in the EU policy, but here in the U.S., burning wood is also treated as renewable energy. Now, in the U.S., we don't have strict regulations that are requiring utility companies to get off of fossil fuels. So we don't see this huge move to convert coal plants to wood in the U.S. right now because of that. But absolutely, if you look at the renewable energy portfolio standards and subsidies that are available for renewable energy here in the U.S., it includes the burning of trees to generate electricity as renewable. And I think it's really important to understand, I think the source of this is that we have failed to fully embrace the critical role that forests play in the fight to solve the climate crisis. And so much of the narrative has been focused on getting off of fossil fuels, which is essential. We're not going to get out of climate change if we don't transition to solar and wind and clean energy, renewable energy. But we're not going to solve the climate crisis by just transitioning off of fossil fuels. This is becoming increasingly important in the science community right now, because they're measuring that we now have 400 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. Safe levels are 350. Carbon hangs out in the atmosphere for a very long time. So scientists are now saying if we're going to meet ambitious climate goals, that we have to start pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. And that means we've got to leave more trees standing to grow, because that's what trees do best. So because we haven't been really focused on forests, we're in the situation now where we're saying, well, we're getting off of fossil fuels, so isn't burning trees better? It's not. It's actually worse. It's taking us backwards.
So are there any advocacy? Is there any advocacy going on in Europe to try and change that practice?
Absolutely. We launched a campaign called Our Forests Aren't Fuel back in 2013 in partnership with the Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, here. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that we did was we started reaching out to organizations in Europe. And now we have a very active coalition that includes dozens of organizations on either side of the Atlantic working to try to change the policies in Europe and at a global level that are driving this climate disaster.
Doesn't Dogwood Alliance have some kind of campaign addressed to the Georgia Public Service Commissioner? Is that about the wood pellets? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, right. So, yeah, Scott Pruitt announced down in Georgia that the EPA was going to have as its official policy, very similar to Europe, that burning trees to generate electricity is designated as carbon neutral, meaning no climate impact. Mm-hmm. And he announced that in conjunction, you know, with the state commission down in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so we've been fighting that. Because factually and scientifically, it's not true that burning trees is carbon neutral. Mm-hmm. Sure, trees grow back, and that's their argument, is that, well, we release the carbon when the tree is burned, but then the tree goes back and it sucks the carbon back out of the atmosphere. But the reality is that the climate would be better off if the tree had just been left in the ground. Mm-hmm. And so when you burn the tree, that is carbon that is additional to the atmosphere. So you can call it zero, but the atmosphere doesn't care whether we call it zero or not. The atmosphere is still seeing additional carbon. So, we've been focused on that as well here.
Okay, that's Dana Smith. She's the executive director of the Dogwood Alliance, and we're talking about the deforestation of the southern forest here in the United States. And you're listening to us at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina, and we'll return with Dana in just a few minutes after this break.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. My sweet love.
control center for the world. Ancient cord coexistence hacked by parasitic greedhead scam. From Sarawak to Amazonas, Costa Rica to mangy BC hills, cortege rhythm of falling timber. What kind of currency grows in these new deserts, these brand new floodplains? Species every single day. Take out people who've lived with this for 100,000 years. Inject a billion burgers worth of beef. Grain eaters. Methane dispensers. Ancient refuse of stars speak of a drowning. But this is something other. Busy monster eats dark holes in the spirit world, where wild things have to go to disappear forever.
Tree Falls in the Forest. Does anybody hear? That was Bruce Cockburn from his album, If a Tree Falls. That was released in 1990. Great song. And this is McNair Ezard, and from 5 to 6 p.m. every Thursday on WPVM, We feature conversations with people who are working in the areas of hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, healthcare, education, housing, restoration of the environment, or those people and organizations who bring a fresh perspective to spirituality. And today we're talking with Dana Smith. She's the executive director of the Dogwood Alliance, which works to save the southern forest. Before the break, we were talking about a practice called wood pellets, right?
That's right.
How widespread is the wood pellet industry in North Carolina?
North Carolina has been ground zero for the expansion of the wood pellet industry. There's a company called Enviva, which came out of nowhere to produce wood pellets for Europe. They have very quickly become the world's largest wood pellet exporter. And they have currently three large wood pellet mills in North Carolina. They also operate a port facility in the port of Wilmington, where they're exporting wood pellets from North Carolina. And they have a mill that's currently under construction in the small rural town of Hamlet, North Carolina.
Now, Dogwood Alliance was involved trying to prevent that opening, right? But how were you involved, I should ask you?
Yeah, so it was an effort that was led by the local community group there called the Concerned Citizens of Richmond County. When they found out from us that Enviva was planning on building a mill there, based on all the information that we shared with them and other information that was available, they recognized fairly quickly that this was not something that they wanted in their community. This is a largely African-American community, low-income community, where this mill is coming in, which is typical of Enviva. In fact, every single mill that they have built in North Carolina has been built in an African-American low-income community in the rural part of our state, in the coastal plain. And they're a community that is already overburdened by pollution from other industries. The process of producing wood pellets is not only destructive to the forest, but it also produces toxic chemicals in the air, volatile organic compounds, which are known to cause serious health problems. And this is a community that's already suffering from health problems because of the burden that they bear already from industries that are already polluting.
Well, do they benefit in any way? Like, are they able to get jobs at these plants?
This is always the way that these mills come in, is under the guise of economic development. And in these rural communities that are typically low income, in fact, the rural communities of the coastal plain of the South tend to have some of the highest poverty rates and highest unemployment rates of anywhere in the country. And these mills come in under the guise of jobs. But the reality is that, number one, they're dirty jobs. Number two, the local communities that need the jobs the most aren't the ones that are actually getting the jobs. A lot of the jobs that are good paying in these facilities are being given to folks who are coming in from out of the community and being relocated to work in these factories. So the community is not really seeing a big upside in terms of economics. And, you know, we're already the world's largest wood producing region, and the logging rates in these communities are already pretty high. If logging and more wood processing facilities were a way to pull communities out of poverty, we would already be out of poverty in these communities. But in fact, just like coal or gas or other extractive markets, what happens with the logging industry and with forest markets is the same, and that is that the resources are being extracted and the profits are being extracted with the resources. So they're really not a good way of growing and ensuring prosperity in rural communities.
Now, you and Reverend Woodbury had an article published on the Truth Out website. Can you give us the title of that article and tell us a little bit about what it's about?
I think the title of it was Forest Climate and Justice in the U.S. Most people, when they think about forest, climate change doesn't immediately come to mind, and justice doesn't come to mind. Globally, that's not the case. Around the world, people very readily are quick to understand that forests are a critical part of the climate conversation, and that the destruction of forests is also a justice issue. In the southeastern U.S., what's happening right now in these rural communities is an injustice. As we were talking before, the pollution from wood processing facilities, whether they be paper mills or wood pellet mills, is disproportionately impacting low-income and people of color. These same communities are being the worst hit by climate change. So when the floods happen, which we've had tremendous damage from in the southeastern U.S., two of the five most expensive natural disasters of 2016 in the world were in the southeast, and it was flooding. And it wasn't just on the coastline, which most people think about for sea level rise. It's actually equally as impacted were communities along the rivers in inland. And with the rate and scale of logging that's four times that of South American rainforest, our forests are not able to perform their best job of protecting communities from floods. So you've got these folks who are low income that are feeling the worst of the impacts of climate change as well.
Okay. And again, you know, if you're listening to the show today, check out that article on the truthout.org, I think it is, website, by Reverend Woodbury and Dana Smith.
They came in the night and they came in the day. Came till they took it all away.
And we're having a conversation with Dana Smith. She's executive director of the Dogwood Alliance.
No life can be found.
You're listening to us at 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming at WPVMFM.org. We come to you, that is, A Better World comes to you every Thursday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. And at WPVM-FM, you can find our archive shows for your enjoyment at any time. And check our schedule for this and other great programs at WPVMFM.org.
What I want to know is where we're going to go when the rain don't make our garden grow and the soil's too dry for our seeds to sow. I'm on till we learn. You play with fire and you're sure to burn. A one-way ticket with a no return. Cause where we gonna go? Well, I don't know. They tell us technology's a wonderful thing. Stop to imagine the destruction it brings. One step forward and two steps back. Go from the light and into the black.
What would you say is, Dan, is the biggest barrier that prevents us from taking more seriously the issue of forest deforestation, climate change, and just in general, the other environmental issues, and really working together as people to bring about change?
We live in a time where fewer and fewer people are controlling money, power, and resources. And I think that is the biggest challenge that we face. Over time, this situation has gotten worse, not better. And yet it's still a relatively few number of people who are really calling the shots. So that's why mobilizing and building a movement of people focused on people power, that is the way that we can hold decision makers accountable. But it requires people to, A, work together towards a common agenda, and it requires people to, B, be engaged in the process.
Does Dogwood Alliance partner with other environmental organizations?
Absolutely. We work in coalition. We launched a, as I mentioned earlier, we're working in coalition right now with dozens of organizations to push back on the idea of burning trees to generate electricity. We also launched the Wetland Forest Initiative, which is an initiative of over 20 organizations that we pulled together from across the South, focused on scaling up the protection of forests along the rivers. Because especially right now, as we're experiencing climate change, the protection of forests along the rivers for just for their mere ability to protect our communities against flooding is becoming more and more of something that people are recognizing as critical. So we have the Wetland Forest Initiative. We just did a report that documented that the critical climate services that these wetland forests provide are, from an economic standpoint, 15 times more valuable than wood products. And yet we're still logging forests along the rivers for wood products, and more recently for wood pellets to be burned in power stations as a so-called climate solution. Mm-hmm. So we've got this coalition now in place that we're working to scale up the protection of wetland forests. And we're right now in the process of building a national coalition to put forest protection at the forefront of our national climate agenda here in the U.S.
So is there any common ground for between groups like Dogwood Alliance and the industrial interests like Enviva wood pellet plant? I mean, is there any area for discussion? I mean, or is it just there's a barrier there and it's not going to be crossed?
Yeah. We fundamentally do not agree, and the science is on our side, that burning trees to generate electricity is a pathway for solving the climate crisis. So Enviva's business model is fatally flawed. And just like we don't need another coal-burning plant, we need to move to solar and wind. We do not need another industrial wood processing industry. And we need to start moving to value forests for things like clean water and clean air, carbon storage and flood control. So we have not found a path forward with Enviva. They have not been willing to really accept the science around burning trees and climate change. Now, we have been able to find some paths forward with the paper industry. We campaigned for over a decade targeting the customers of the big paper companies. Through that process, we're able to actually get some improvements in the way that the paper industry is doing business in the woods today. And while those commitments were meaningful, they're not enough. We still have a huge problem on our hands in the southeastern region. And we're at a place right now where we really do need to value trees standing more than we're valuing them when they are logged.
So what can people do in their local communities to get involved in this issue?
Yeah, so there are a number of things that folks can do. One of the easiest thing is to just hop on our website, www.dogwoodalliance.org, sign up on our email list, and that will get you plugged into our various campaigns. And there's lots of ways that people can take action in their local communities, all the way from clicking an email and sending an email to actually trying to put forward forest resolutions in their local communities, to helping to spread the word and show video documentaries that we have about the work that we're doing and help to get the word out with their neighbors and friends.
We just got a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about. Are you getting any traction with, say, the North Carolina state government or people like Governor Cooper for your concerns?
You know, we're really disappointed in Governor Cooper right now because over this last year, even though Governor Cooper is one of the first governors to come out after the Trump administration decided that they were going to pull out of the Paris Agreement and say, we're still in, North Carolina is still in. We're going to do our part. Governor Cooper has failed to this point to respond to the massive amount of public pressure that he has gotten to stop Enviva from constructing the wood pellet mill in the rural community of Richmond County. And he has been silent thus far on the wood pellet industry as a whole in North Carolina, though it has been the on the forefront of international headlines. The clearing of old wetland forests along the rivers of North Carolina's coast have been the source of huge controversy in international media around climate change in Europe. Mm-hmm. And Governor Cooper has an opportunity right now to really turn the tide and to elevate the critical role that forests play. He believes in climate change, and he is committed to do something to address it. So he's a critical player right now, and we are continuing to pressure him.
So what's behind the disconnect?
I wish I knew.
Yeah. Events coming up you wanted to tell us about.
Yeah, we really open up a conversation about what it looks like when we put justice first, and how do we create more solidarity across issues so that we can advance an agenda that where everyone has clean energy, where everyone has a healthy environment and a beautiful place to live, work, and play.
Mm-hmm. In the work you do, you're up against some pretty hefty interest, corporate interest. Do you ever get discouraged in this work, and what keeps you going?
Every so often it maybe get a little bit discouraged, but the thing that really keeps me going is the forest. The forest is such a healing place to be, and where we live here in Asheville, we are so fortunate to be able to experience the beauty and all of the gifts that healthy forests provide. And that's really what keeps me hopeful.
Okay. On that note, we'll say goodbye. You've been listening to a conversation with Dana Smith, Executive Director of the Dogwood Alliance. And thank you for being here, Dana. Good luck and keep up the fight.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to A Better World on 103.7 WPVM-FM, brought to you each Thursday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next week on A Better World. Today we're going out with a Neil Young song from his album Living with War. It's called After the Garden.
After the garden is gone.
are tuned into